Live from the KOAL newsroom in Price, Utah, it's Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Take that for data.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm looking forward to this next conversation. It's going to be good. We're going to talk college and NFL football. And we're joined right now by a great friend of mine and a great friend of the show, Steve Bordstein. Steve, it's a pleasure to get you back on. I've enjoyed our conversations. They've kind of strayed from the normal over the last few weeks, but it's definitely been fun. Different types of conversations.
Well, it's a pleasure to be on with you again, and certainly there's been no normal for a while now, so I'm glad to have added to those conversations a little bit.
Well, let's start by talking about college football, and I want to get your opinion, not necessarily on the situation. We can talk about the situation, but it's an NCAA rule. And yesterday, former USC running back Reggie Bush, the disassociation from the university has come to a close. And one of the things that I don't think people really understand is it wasn't USC telling Reggie Bush, we don't want anything to do with you, and then saying, okay, it's been long enough, welcome back. No, 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 that's not the way it works. There is a timing issue that comes in with the results of an NCAA committee infraction rule. It was adopted in 2017. It limits any mandated disassociation between an individual and a school for 10 years. Reggie Bush's disassociation began in June of 2010. Therefore, it has come to a close. You're a hardcore USC guy. You're a USC alum. Everybody that listens to the show knows this. We had this conversation during the NFL draft. I'm curious as to your thoughts now that Reggie Bush is once again a part of the USC allure, this tradition, this rich history that they have in college football.
There's going to be a theme to this entire conversation, and it's a marketing theme, right? We'll get to the NFL part of that here in a moment. This is a marketing thing for USC, and it's a positive for USC, and it's a positive for college football. Don't forget, Reggie Bush's sort of involvement again in college football really started a year or two ago when he became a regular on Fox's college football pregame show and postgame show. He has slowly but surely now started to integrate himself, ingratiate himself at the same time in the world of college football. He now appears on Fox. He was on there with Urban Meyer for a while. He was on there with Matt Leinart for a little while. He's a part of their broadcast. So him having some insight now in college football, and now having him back with the school that made him a legend, we'll get to that here in a second, is a good thing for everyone involved. It's a good thing for USC, it's a good thing for college football, and it's a good thing for Fox, who broadcasts college football. So from a marketing standpoint, it makes sense. Now, the USC part of this is sticky, because USC kind of went out of their way to disassociate themselves from Reggie Bush after the scandal that broke out regarding his improper benefits. Remember, his roster, his jersey, still doesn't appear in the Coliseum. They have the jerseys, the Hall of Fame area, the Coliseum, where they had all the jerseys on display. O.J. Simpson's is up there, but not Reggie Bush's, which is still kind of odd to a lot of people. I can certainly understand why. So it was this whole idea of Reggie Bush was persona non grata for a little while. I'm okay with Reggie Bush being a part of USC, but under no circumstances, and you and I had this conversation off here, under no circumstances do I want Pete Carroll ever a part of USC. I'm not so mad at Reggie Bush. He was given benefits. Of course, he's going to take those benefits. Any 19, 20-year-old kid would have been out of their mind to not take those benefits. It was Pete Carroll, and it was Mike Garrett, and it was the administration, it was the sports administration of that university that allowed this to happen and allowed USC to be put in that position. Therefore, I'm okay with Reggie Bush sort of being welcomed back into the fold. Under no circumstances, though, should Pete Carroll be allowed back in that fold.
Yeah, and I've had this same train of thought for a very long time. I've been very hard on Pete Carroll. I don't have a lot of kind things to say about Pete Carroll. And look, I'll use this analogy. If my 5-year-old daughter sticks a fork in an outlet socket and she gets shocked, she's not to blame. I'm to blame, okay? Because I'm her parent and I'm supposed to be watching over her. To me, that's an equal analogy when we take a look at what happened at USC. Pete Carroll was 110% at fault for what happened. And to make matters worse, he not only bolted from USC, a place where he had built a college football empire. And for those who are unaware, USC football wasn't quite on the same level as Dodger baseball or Laker basketball in LA, but it was pretty close, Steve. I mean, it was a close third right behind those two. That's how big USC football was in SoCal at that particular time. Pete Carroll knew what was coming down. He bolted, then played dumb at the press conference, acting like he had absolutely no idea any of this was coming down the shoot. Pete Carroll was 110% responsible for what happened at USC. Now, when I say that, I probably have a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for Reggie Bush and Lendell White. I can't believe I'm saying this because I'm not a USC guy at all, but it was absolutely brilliant the way they performed on the football field. Matt Leinart, is one of the greatest college football quarterbacks I have personally ever watched. It's sad that that particular era has been swiped from the record books, but the fact remains, it's not necessarily the kids' fault. It's Pete Carroll, who was making millions and millions of dollars to run a clean program and have institutional control.
You made the comparison of the Dodgers and the Lakers. I'll keep it in college football. Before Alabama and Clemson became Alabama and Clemson that we know of today, that was USC.
No question.
That was USC 15 years ago, 13 years ago. They were that big. It was that level. You did not talk about college football without talking about, well, who's going to play USC for the national championship, whether it was LSU, whether it was Oklahoma, or whether it was Texas. Those were the games every single year for those 3 years, 2004, 2005, 2006, in college football. So, and who was there? Pete Carroll. So he's there. To your point earlier about how he's 110% complicit in this, 110% responsible in this, if you believe that he's not, then you have to convince me that either A, Pete Carroll hired people who went behind his back, which makes him responsible, or B, that Pete Carroll was completely unaware of the fact that his staff was giving out these benefits, which again falls on the shoulders of Pete Carroll. So he's either lying or he's the most idiotic human being on the planet. Either way, he's responsible, and he's the reason why USC was in that position for so long. And let's also remember, what did Pete Carroll leave behind in his wake? A few years of Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian. I mean, this was a disaster for USC, a disaster that we haven't seen in college football since the days of SMU.
Again, Steve Bordstein, our guest right now. Again, we're talking about marketing over the course of college football and, of course, NFL as well. And, Steve, you mentioned that marketing was going to be a reoccurring theme during this particular conversation, and we can actually draw this now into the NFL. And it's a topic that we don't discuss an awful lot here on Drive Time Sports, but with everything that's going on right now, it is kind of just it is the weirdest year to be associated with sports in any sort of capacity. And the NFL has kind of been the focal point of a lot of social issues, a lot of social, social talk, right? I don't even know how to word it.
A lot of things happening around the country, and the NFL wants their piece of it.
Yes, they're right in the middle of it once again. And I have to explain this. I've explained this to several people. This has absolutely nothing to do with the NFL caring one iota about the social issues. This has everything to do with the NFL and marketing. This is a billion-dollar organization, right? This is what this is all built around. It's marketing. Do you disagree?
No, completely agree. And this goes back to a conversation that we had several years ago, okay? When Ray Rice was videoed beating his girlfriend, his fiance at the time. The NFL was livid, right? Everyone was livid for good reason. Don't beat your girlfriend. Don't beat your wife. Don't beat your fiance. That's explainable. What was the NFL's response to it? Well, they went after Ray Rice. They went after the Baltimore Ravens. And then they launched a marketing campaign about the domestic violence issue and what a horrifying thing it is. And they launched a marketing campaign. You couldn't watch an NFL football game without there being commercials all over it. Before that, it was breast cancer, which, again, very personal topic, a very difficult topic, but you don't see them doing commercials about other types of cancer. Why? Well, because breast cancer sells jerseys. We can make pink jerseys, and the NFL can put pink ribbons on things, and they can put them online, and they can put them on the NFL shop, and they can promote those things. It's all a marketing thing. Okay, so then the Colin Kaepernick thing comes up. They want nothing to do with that. Remember, 2016. Remember the world we lived in 2016, which now seems like decades ago? But again, Donald Trump was the president. He had just been elected. We were very rah-rah, pro-American. I'm not saying that we're not now, but the NFL didn't want anything to do with that. So they steered themselves as far away from Colin Kaepernick and the flag protests as possible. Well, now here we are. We're in 2020. The world's a vastly different place now than it was in 2016. And the NFL now finds themselves in that enviable position as far as marketing is concerned, where now they can say, you know what? Colin Kaepernick was right. He was right all along. And we do need to be more socially aware of what's happening in our inner communities, particularly in the areas of Detroit, where the Lions play, particularly in areas of Minneapolis, where the Vikings play, particularly in areas of Houston, where the Texans play. So we want to be very active in this area. We want to show our support for these inner cities because there's teams that play there, and we want to make sure that we can sell a few more jerseys in these cities, and we can also get fans who may not be able to go to games, but they can still be active in watching games. So we want to do the right thing and make sure that we're promoting these things, especially in these big cities where there just happen to be teams that are in those cities. Imagine if these things were happening in Boise, Idaho. Imagine if these things were happening in, I don't know, name a big city that doesn't have an NFL team. We wouldn't care. The NFL would not be that involved. But the NFL is involved. Why? Because there's money to be made. And that's what it always comes down to. The NFL can say everything they want the right way. The NFL's clearly doing this because they know this is going to be a tough year for them, financially speaking, especially if there's going to be a minimum amount of fans in the stands at games, or maybe there's only going to be a minimum amount of games that are going to be played. They may lose games. They're in the perfect position to maximize this as much as possible. So don't mistake the NFL's sudden interest in social issues as them having a sole interest in social issues. No, they're trying to make a buck here. Not a bad thing. Any business would do that. The NFL happens to be under a different spotlight.
All right, and that's the way we can correlate, right, connect the dots to the USC conversation that we were just having a few moments ago. And the reason why I say you can connect those dots is because, again, I'm going to bring it up. There's a 10-year period in which the NCAA mandates that you can have no association with a player that has been found to violate rules. And I believe there was four, if memory serves me right, with Reggie Bush. And again, that disassociation began back in June of 2010. Once that 10-year period is over, according to the COI procedures, the NCAA no longer monitors or enforces that disassociation. The school is then given the freedom to decide how they want to proceed. And Steve, you've been to the campus, obviously, at USC. I've walked that campus many times, and this is not a direct shot at USC. Again, this is the idea of making a buck. You would be foolish to think that when you walk into that bookstore going into 2021, there will not be Reggie Bush jerseys for sale, because there will be.
Of course there will be. There's O.J. Simpson jerseys there. You can buy an O.J. Simpson jersey at the USC bookstore. And if you can buy an O.J. Simpson jersey and look yourself in the mirror the next day, I don't personally care. I mean, he was found not guilty. That's my journalistic world. That's my journalistic world. Hey, he was found not guilty by a jury of his peers. But we know better, right? I mean, what Reggie Bush did was minimal compared to what O.J. Simpson did. But for years, Reggie Bush was persona non grata over there. And, you know, but now you can go and buy one of his jerseys. And again, I'm not mad at Reggie Bush for what he did, because, again, any 19-year-old kid, if you're flashing a Range Rover in the kid's face, you're going to take it. Watch Blue Chips, and you'll get an idea of what happens in college basketball. It's the same thing. So I'm not mad at him. I'm mad that the way it ended up, but I'm more mad at Pete Carroll because he allowed it to happen.
And last segment, Steve, we talked to Galen White, one of my favorite baseball authors and historians. And at the end of that segment, he alluded to the changes in the game of baseball, where the players that he loves to highlight in his work, these were minor league baseball players that had other jobs, multiple other jobs, just to survive. And right now, we have billionaires bickering with millionaires over slight percentages in dollars. Again, you can correlate this. Times have certainly changed with sports, haven't they?
It has been a wacky year. It has been I envy you on a regular basis being able to, you know, wade your way through these waters over the last several months. But it'll be great when we can actually talk sports. But we're seeing now, you know, whether it's a marketing thing here or a marketing thing there or a social issue here or a pandemic or a reaction to a pandemic there. We're finding out a lot about the people behind not just the jerseys, but the people behind the front offices of not just teams, but leagues around sports, not just here, not just in America, but around the world as well.
Steve Bordstein, again, a guest here on Drive Time Sports. Steve, it is always a pleasure to get you on the show to have these conversations. Thank you again for the time today.
Anytime, my friend. Thank you.
It's always great to get Steve Bordstein here on Drive Time Sports. Again, an interesting conversation in a time where we have no current sports to talk about. And the landscape of it has kind of changed. That was kind of the relative theme of the show today. Again, we are out of time. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. We'll have a conversation on the NBA as we inch a little bit closer to restarting the season, potentially now on July 30th. That'll be on Drive Time Sports right here tomorrow. Until then, be safe. I am out.